introduce, I'm Adam Kinsall. I'm from Jasper, Alabama. I have been happy to be here before, been several years ago. Happy to know all the familiar faces that we see throughout the year. Very excited, very blessed to be here. And thank you all so much for having me. If we can, we're going to open up our Bibles to Matthew chapter 24. We at home have been going through the book of Matthew. We actually hadn't made it to this chapter yet. Shockingly enough, we've actually been in the book of Matthew going through it for 2 years, and we still haven't made it yet to chapter 24. So, that tells you about what speed we're moving at. I do feel confident we will get through it before the rapture, but we'll see. We are now looking at Matthew chapter 24, and it seems like a weird place to dive in. But as I was studying and preparing and thinking about this weekend, as I've been reading through this gospel over and over and over and over again over the last several years, I was struck 2 years ago with a burden and impression to go through the gospel of Matthew for a purpose that I feel is really important. We look out at the landscape of our nation today, of our world, of our society, of our culture, of the culture of Christianity today. And as I look, I just see so many things that just disturb me to my core. And that really is what launched me into the book of Matthew, because I was struck kind of with this thought, call me crazy. If we're going to say we're Christians, we should probably follow and do what Christ said, right? Seems like a pretty straightforward answer. Now, granted, you can get a lot of commentaries that are filled with a lot of good information. You can go through a lot of the epistles. You can pull out Paul, Peter, John, maybe even Ringo, and there's a population that's going to get that joke and some that aren't. But you can pull out the epistles. You can pull out these guys. They have some really good stuff. Jesus's is better. What Jesus said is better. Jesus is always, he's the cornerstone. That's who we go to first. Paul is getting all of his stuff off of borrowed information. He's taking what Christ said. So if we're going to be Christians, we got to do what Christ said, right? So that's what really hit me, is that I see a lot of what is proclaimed as Christianity today. They just, when they say stuff and do stuff on TV or Facebook or Twitter, I'm going, that's not what Jesus said. That's not what Jesus told us to do. And it's not even things like most people will jump into thinking, oh, well, you're talking about big theological things like the Trinity and stuff like that. No, I'm talking about things like love your neighbor. Simple, easy to understand, not doctrinally complicated. When I see that going away, it really disturbs me. So we launched a couple of years ago into the book of Matthew to just go through what Christ said. Look at the letters that are written in red. What did Christ tell us to do? How did he tell us to do it? What kind of lives are we supposed to live for Christ? And what does that look like? So that's what we launched into. And we have been slowly, methodically plodding through the book of Matthew. We got up to chapter 22, and we're going to continue on out. But as we were reading through this, I got to chapter 24, and I started reading it. And this is 23, 24, and 25. You're getting into kind of those big questions that the disciples had. Christ, what is going to be the end game? And how are we going to know? And what should we be looking for? And all these things. And Christ starts expounding that to them. And let me just go ahead and break the bubble for you, which I think you already know. It doesn't sound like a pretty happy situation. Okay? And that was actually a little shocking to the disciples, because see, these disciples were Jews, and they had this idea that what the Messiah was supposed to do was come and reestablish the nation of Israel. Man, we're going to have the walls, and we're going to have the towers, and we're going to have the temple, and all these foreign Roman pagan, they're all going to be gone, and we're going to be awesome again and rule the world. And that's what the Messiah is to bring in, this kingdom of the Jews. And what Jesus tried to, and as we've been going through it, you see it over and over again, him trying to tell them, guys, I'm bringing my kingdom, but it ain't the kingdom you think it's going to be. It's going to encompass more than just you. It's going to expand, and it's going to encompass the entire world. It's going to reach to all four corners of the globe. It's going to be inhabited by people of colors and races and creeds and things that you don't even know or could even fathom. And one picture that is my most favorite of all is when he describes the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, like a mustard seed. It starts off as this small little thing, but then when it grows, it turns into this large tree. And all the birds of the air inhabit it, which is symbolic of all the diversity of people that will come to inhabit this kingdom of heaven. It's a beautiful picture. So now when you're talking about end times and he's talking about bleakness and despair and destruction and everything's going to pot, he goes, this is what's going to happen. And they're going, that doesn't sound like what the Messiah is supposed to do. Everything's supposed to be great. Kingdom's supposed to be established. Jerusalem's going to flourish. We're going to be the center of the world again. So they had a hard time coming to grips with this. We know that because when you read Acts chapter 1, as Christ is getting ready to take that heavenly escalator back up, you talk to him and he's telling him, hey guys, here we go, I'm about to leave the world. The one question they had was, okay, but when is the kingdom going to be reestablished? And if you've ever seen like those should have had a V8 commercials, like I can only imagine Jesus slapping his forehead going, guys, I've been with you for 3 years. Have you not gotten it yet? I guess we're not necessarily in bad company because we do that same thing, but here he's kind of explaining that. He says, this is what's going to happen. So let's read Matthew chapter 24, starting in verse 4, and we're going to read down to verse 14. And Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no man deceive you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All good times coming. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you. Still good times to be had. And ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. And this is key here, 12 through 14. And because iniquity or lawlessness shall abound and grow, the love of many shall wax or grow cold. But he that shall endure unto the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. And that's where we're going to take our time this morning. Now, as we've kind of briefly launched out into this, I think we can ask the questions, a couple of questions this morning. As a nation, as a community, as a people, whatever, how narrow or broad you want to make it, how would you describe the society today? Would you describe it as religious or secular? Okay. Would you describe it as conservative or liberal? Would you describe it as loving or unloving? What about compassionate or uncaring? Now, we said that we feel like the nation is more secular, but did you know that 75% of Americans identify as Christian? Okay? 75% of Americans identify as Christian. Now, that's actually down from 85% in 1990. But you've got a overwhelming majority of Americans who, when they're checking a box, says, yep, I'm Christian. Shockingly enough, too, with that, since 1990, suicide rates are up 24%. It's amazing when you look at the graph of that, how ticking along up until about 2001, 2003, around in there, you're pretty steady, and then you just take this nice opposite of a nosedive. We're not going to make any kind of plane crash references in the presence of Brother Mike. We were talking about that last night. But up the hill, way up, all right? I can't help but believe that has something to do with Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Now look, I'm on Facebook, sparingly. I'm on Instagram. I'm not knocking those things as negatives, but let me just ask you a question. Have you ever known someone who has been hurt by vicious things posted, who has felt depressed or lonely because of their Twitter responses? comments made, attacks made. Have we not known that? Have we not seen that? And you say it's not something that's necessarily new, it's so in our faces now. It's everywhere. The vanity of comparison is everywhere. Depression then is up because of that. Because vanity upon vanity upon vanity just vexes our souls. Plus, it just seems like this easy medium for people to say stuff that you just never would say before. I mean, there's things that I'll read, I'm like, dude, why would you ever say that in public? Like, whoever thought that was an acceptable thing to say? But for some reason, because it's on Facebook or Twitter, you think you can just blurt it on out there and it's just received. I mean, the way that our society is trending with this is not really good. So, I mean, I feel like we would all probably answer in the affirmative that things are just a little less civil, a little less nice, a little less compassionate. And when you read these things like Christ is talking about, it's right here. I mean, look at this bleak situation that he paints here. You're going to have wars and rumors of wars. You're going to have deceivers and false prophets, pestilence, earthquakes, destruction, natural disasters, nations rising up against nations, religious persecutions. Sounds like a fun time, right? Sounds like a good day. Jesus wasn't sugarcoating this. He wasn't trying to make it out like some kind of rosy picture that everybody could hop along with. He was giving them the reality. And unfortunately, in today's time, I think that's what we see. And I'm not saying we're like knocking on Matthew 24's door, but I'm saying we're looking a whole lot like what he's talking about. We're looking, our society is doing this. Our society is easing in this direction slowly but surely. And I mean, 2 Timothy, he says the same thing in that epistle. He talks about evil men and seducers waxing worse and worse and worse. And just when you think you've hit the bottom, man, there's another level to it. Okay? So here we have Jesus laying out this bleak situation of death and destruction and despair and all these things, and how increasingly more awful it is over and over and over again. And you kind of ask the question, well, this is a great Sunday service. Glad we invited Brother Adam. Everything sounds great. I would say this, do we not agree, but this is where we are. This is where we're going. Like I said, I can be a little bit like Jesus. I can sugarcoat it and say, everything's great. Everything's nice. Don't worry about it. Those are outliers. Those people on Facebook are just the crazies. And then really the vast majority of but that's not the case. We don't see that reflected. If it was, then that's what I would tell you, but it's not the case. So where do we go from here? The most striking thing out of this section of Scripture that I think really hit me, there was two of them. The first one was, if you notice how everything kind of is degrading, you have all these wars and pestilences and all these things, and it sounds awful, but then he says, because of this iniquity, because of this lawlessness, because this is just getting more and more and more, he says, it will actually cause the love of many to grow colder. So it's this kind of equation here. As you see this elevating, pestilence, wars, rumors, famines. You see wars that lead to more famines and pestilence. You see more pestilence leading to more poverty leading to more despair to more hopelessness and anxiousness. And then you got demagogues and false prophets and all these other people spouting out vitriol, and all these things are just spiraling up and up and up and up and up. And he says, and as that goes up and up and up, guess what? Just general love starts tending to trend down. It grows colder and colder. So ultimately, you see this world in this bleak, full of destruction, and as it gets more and more, even love begins to fail. Just general, simple love starts going away. Again, I'm not a prophet, and I'm not trying to say that we're there at this point, but I mean, all you got to do is flip on Facebook, pull up Instagram, go to CNN, look at Fox News, do something like that, and all you see is hate, animosity, vitriol, attacks, over and over. I mean, it is a 24-hour news cycle filled with all of that garbage. Over and over and over and over again. And I don't know if you've ever done it, and maybe you have and now you haven't or what, but try just watching that for a week. Let it be the only thing on your feed for the whole week. And just watch it. See how you feel at the end of that week. See how you really feel towards your fellow man. See how you feel towards yourself. See if you don't notice some despair and hopelessness and anger and wrath rising up while love tends to go away. So what do we do? Here's the bleakness of the society laid out here in front of us. We look at these verses and we go, man, this is rough. And this is, again, when we've gone through this with Matthew, when we started, the first place we started was Matthew chapter 5. We were like, man, let's go to Jesus' first real sermon. We're going to listen to what he has to say. If we're going to be Christians and follow Jesus Christ, let's listen to his first sermon he preached. The first sermon that lasted for 3 chapters and went on and on about compassion and mercy and love. In fact, in one of the places, he just kind of blew the lid off of everything because they had been told that you can love your neighbor but hate your enemy. And he said, guys, I've got to break it to you. It's never been that way. What God has always commanded was that you love your neighbors, even your enemies. And in fact, he goes into more detail about how to love your enemies than he did your neighbor. He said, with your enemies, you need to go and you need to carry them water when they're thirsty. You need to carry them food when they're hungry. If they're broken down on the side of the road with a flat tire, you don't just speed past them and say, well, sorry for you, buddy. You actually need to stop and help them. That's love increasing, not decreasing. That's a love that the world does not know. What do we normally get when we have problems or people who have offended us or enemies, so-called, that we have? What does the world normally tell us that our natural response should be? Oh, man, get them back. They hurt you, hurt them back. Hurt them back more. Or ignore them. Treat them wrong. Leave them alone. They got themselves in that situation, they can get themselves out. I mean, all of these things are what we hear over and over again. Jesus' first teachings was, I'm going to tell you, you're going to be radical as my followers. And the way that you're going to be radical is by loving people who nobody else would love. Whether that's poor people, whether that's prostitutes, whether that's tax collectors that they hate, whether that's your enemies, you're going to love them just like I love you. That was Christ's message. That was right out of the gate. I mean, really, if you're going to start a sermon series, okay, that's not normally where you started at, calling everybody out is wrong and telling everybody how they got to do a bunch of stuff they don't really want to do, okay? That's just not where you go. You ease in gradually, you know? You kind of give them some easy, good stuff to bite off of, and then you kind of add in the tougher stuff later on. Well, that's not what Jesus did. He came right out of the gate going, look, guys, you have heard it said, but I'm telling you this is how it is. Now pick up that cross and follow me. So when we see this kind of bleakness laid out here and all of this stuff going south and the love of man is decreasing, you just see this situation. It's like getting darker and darker and darker. It reminds me so much of like a movie scene, okay? So it's like in Lord of the Rings or something like that where you have this big epic, you have reached this climax, but all of a sudden, it just feels like the hero's about to die. The world's caving in. There's no hope. Who's going to save him? Now, of course, you always know that, like, Frodo's going to get out of that because if not, well, then there goes the movie. You can't have a third movie if he dies in two, right? Okay, it just doesn't work that way. Star Wars, same thing. I mean, that's just how that works. So you know there's going to come. You know that's there. In our natures, we have this anticipation of the story where we know there's going to be this resolution, but there's always that moment that sucks us in where we go, man, everything in this movie is falling apart. How in the world are we going to get out of this? And that's a lot of times how I feel when I'm looking around at what we're dealing with today. It is disturbing to me that, like, I know, you know, I'm only 34, so I don't have some, like, extensive, vast life experience, okay? I've got 34 years worth. I've got four kids. I've got some, all right? And I think sometimes the more kids you have actually amplifies the age experience thing, okay? So, you know, that's just how that works. But I know that I don't have a ton of experience, but I can at least remember a time before Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and there's probably people going, oh, never, couldn't be. Yeah, you know, we used to have like the dial-up internet thing. You had to listen to it, all right, and get it connect. All right, that was there. It was a reality. Hashtag real life. That's how that went. So, like, I can remember a time, though, where, like I said, the things that are said today, we would have just been like, you just didn't do that. Especially in the South, we had this nice little genteel Southern culture thing, and you just didn't say stuff like that. Now people are not just like talking back to their mamas, they're like tweeting back at their mamas. I mean, it's a whole new level of stuff. And what's sad to me is like, my kids are going to grow up in a generation where that's the normal. I can at least look back and go, man, there used to be a time we didn't do this. Now I'm looking at it going, my kids are going to grow up in a time where this is like the normal. But what I find also in this section of Scripture that is so striking to me, that gives me hope beyond hope, is verse 14, where he says, "And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." Now, you have probably, even if you have not really gotten out into the theological world, you have probably at some point in time heard somebody hijack this verse and make it into some kind of, you know, eschatology thing where they feel like they're the harbingers of the end times. And if you don't get, you got to purposely get that gospel out there to every corner of the world, every inhabited place or whatever, you got to get it out there. And once you get to that final person, boom, then it comes and there you go. Well, then, you know, that's a hijacking of the verse, okay? And I really don't even want us getting on that because you will miss the beauty of the verse. The beautiful thing about this verse to me is how it is juxtaposed to the previous verse. In verse 13 or 12, you have the iniquity, the lawlessness, the hopelessness, the despair, the wars, the famines, the pestilence, everything getting worse and worse, and even up to the point where the love is dying. Society is degrading. It is withering on the vine. That's the verse you have, and you go, man, that sounds awful. And if that's where we were left, you'd go, man, Jesus, this is not a good situation. What do we have to go off of? Well, as all that iniquity and increasing and despair is increasing and hopelessness is taking root, what Christ tells us is that underlining all of that, mixed in with all that, in, you could say, equal proportion to all that, okay? The gospel message is also there bearing witness against it. That's what is so hopeful about that verse to me. I'm not looking at some kind of equation of how to bring Jesus back, because Jesus is going to go ahead and tell us a little bit later, look, even I don't know the time, okay? Since only the Father does, it'll happen when it happens. All I'm telling you is be ready. You know, trim those wicks, do all that stuff. He just tells you to get ready. But here, I'm not worried about that. I'm not coming up with some kind of equation of how I can make this happen and bring it on in. Instead, I'm just resting in the sweet hope that that verse tells me that even though the world in every age to come, previously, now, and in the future, even though we are going to see this constant degradation of our society into whatever it is, and even though we're going to start seeing where just generally love used to exist is now just kind of sliding off and becoming out of vogue, what we have to rest on is the fact that gospel is always going to be there. It's always going to be bearing witness against it. It's not hidden in some corner. As the nations over here are going south, the gospel is right there going, yeah, and I'm telling you, that's the direction you're heading. And I'm telling you, this is why this is wrong. And in addition to that, I'm telling you why you don't have to despair, because this is not all there is. Let's just be honest. If your Instagram account is the sum total of your existence, I'm going to tell you, there's a lot more to life than that, okay? A lot more to little hearts on posts. There's a lot more to life than like buttons on your feed, I promise you. And what the gospel does is it bears witness to that all the time, in every nation, everywhere. That's the beautiful thing. Even when you go to other places, you say, well, maybe this is just an American problem. No, you can travel around the world. You can go to Africa. You can go to China. You can go to Russia. You can go to Colombia. You can go to South America. You can go all the other places. I know it's in there. I know. But you can go to all these other places. You can travel the world. And yeah, maybe their problem is they don't have a beefed up Instagram feed. Okay? Maybe that's not their issue. Let's just go ahead and lay it out. That is a first world problem. Okay? There's actually some real problems in the world. Okay? But there's places that you can go to, places where people are living in poverty and things that you have never even comprehended. We were discussing this last night that I went on a mission trip down to Honduras doing a medical mission. There were people living in an abandoned dump, okay? Now, you can drive around here. I bet the dumps in Atlanta are beautiful, okay? Just because it seems like everything has to be beautiful in Atlanta, right? There's obviously the roads are beautiful. Even the little retaining walls on the sides, they're all beautiful. You know, everything's all, you know, keyed up and nicely done. All right, props to all that. You can come to Birmingham and see some ugly highways if you want to. But around here, everything's just so beautiful, okay? Everything's so nice. You got sign laws, and that way they don't have big signs standing up there. You know, you got all this beautiful stuff. I bet even the dumps are pretty attractive, okay? I've been and seen places like in Honduras where a third world country dump, as you can imagine, is not very pretty. Now let's imagine you filled that dump up. You got to go to a new dump site and people moved into the old dump site and lived there. I'm talking about like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds running around barefoot in the dump. Some of y'all wouldn't even let them run around in your backyard barefoot. Those kind of problems. And you say, man, that is awful. Yeah, it is. That is a sad situation. And that's like 90%. You remember, we're only like 10%. That's like 90% of the world. So what's their hope when you're living in a dump and you have poverty and you don't know where your next meal? What is their hope? Well, thankfully, I have the same gospel that I get to enjoy and understand here. They have the same gospel too in their corner of the world, preaching the same hopeful message of Jesus Christ, that this world is not their home, that there is something greater than this. And I can tell you that somebody who's struggling with an Instagram problem, that may be a real issue, but someone who's living in a dump all their life, that's going to be a sweet message. Now, your Facebook, Instagram problem, the problem we have in our culture is, oh, there's just something else. You know, well, I can just hop off Facebook and I can hop on Instagram and all of a sudden I got my follower, or I can hop off Instagram and I can go find something else in my culture that will satisfy that need and I can find some hope again in this world. We sometimes are in a worse blindness than some of these places we go to because at least they know there's not anything else. Where are you gonna go? What's going to be your next step? So they have the gospel, just like we have the gospel. Just like whoever is struggling with whatever, wherever, has the gospel. And that's what this verse says. It is a prophecy that the gospel is going to permeate all of these places. That there's not going to be a corner of the world where someone can be void of knowledge of it. And I think that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to know that we have that hope in the gospel and that it's not just cloistered in Jerusalem and it's not just in some kingdom in the Middle East and it's not just to a certain select few group of people who have the right codes or the right theology or went to the right schools or live in the right country. But when we talk about the gospel, what is the gospel? And I know you've probably, in all of your life, in all your sermons, and all your things that you have sat under, you have heard some story, some sermon, some something that said, this is what the gospel is, right? I think we all have a general idea. A lot of times, we as preachers will take a really easy way out. We'll flip over to 1 Corinthians and we'll say, see, the gospel is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And that's it, okay? The problem I find with that nice, very theologically sound, but quaint description is that it leaves out a very large portion of the gospel, which is Jesus' life. We tend to fast forward. We fast forward past his life to the cross. We talk about all the theological and eschatological, okay? I'm not going to get out this morning, so we're just going to quit, all right? We want to fast forward to those scenes. We want to fast forward to what Christ did on the cross. We want to fast forward to all the things he accomplished and what he did and all this stuff. But do we understand that what's so amazing about this story is the fact that Christ lived here with us for 33 years? Like I said, I'm 34. I have almost outlived Christ at this point. He lived a life with all of us on purpose. It wasn't an accident. He did it on purpose. And that's a pretty amazing part of this kind of big, amazing story that we are talking about this morning. Because, you know, we're kind of a niche group. We as a quote-unquote religion, even though I don't usually call us that, we as a religion, we are kind of unique in the fact that we believe that God was able to come down here and live with us. You know, most religions don't buy into that. Most of them think that that's an impossibility. Either God, because he is of a external material, could not physically inhabit this earth, because that would be kind of like antimatter and matter, you know, Jean and Han. That's my, you know, I got some Georgia Techers that are probably going to get me on the Jean and Han term, but that's kind of this thing that just couldn't happen, all right? Or maybe it's the fact that he is so pure and holy. You know, that's one thought. He is so pure and holy, there's no way he could inhabit a carnal, broken world. So we're kind of unique in the fact that we believe even that God could come and inhabit this place, okay? And what's even more amazing in all this, as we all well know this story, is that it's not just that he came down here, and as I've said before, you know, you could, if God really wanted to, if he hadn't had a purpose in it, he could come in like SEAL Team 6, man. He could just drop in, cross out, done, mission accomplished. We did the atoning sacrifice, and now we're out. Why did you have to live 33 years to get to that point? Well, you didn't. You're Jesus. You're God. You could come down here and do it any way you wanted to. He chose to do that. The Father of all life, the Creator of everything, chose to allow his only well-beloved Son to come down here and live with us, to die for us, to save us. Hebrews puts it this way, which is one of my most favorite sections of Scripture because it is so, so close to where we are. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 6 through 18 says, "But one in a certain place testified, saying, 'What is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that thou visited him?'" Basically, who are we as humanity, and why would you come down and visit us? "Thou madest him," that's Jesus, "a little lower than the angels. Ye crowned him with glory and honor, and did set him over the works of your hands. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him." We're going to get there, I promise. "But now we see not yet all things put under him. But," this is where it gets good, "we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death." Your whole existence was made for this purpose. Now, we have some purposes in our lives, and we think we're made for a purpose, and we like to flip over to, you know, Proverbs and things and, you know, talk about how we're wonderfully and beautifully made and all this. Jesus was made purposefully on the level of humanity expressly for the purpose of dying. Now, a lot of us would not pick that job description, right? "That he, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man." Again, not usually two phrases we see put together. We think grace of God, we think happy-go-lucky, skipping through the daisies, everything's great. The grace of God here was purposefully putting Jesus in the point to where he would die for us. "For it became him," for whom are all things and by whom all are things, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. For both he that sanctifieth and they who are sanctified are all one. This is where we get on a nice camaraderie with Jesus level. That he says he purposefully came here to die, but he also purposefully came here to suffer, like we suffer, to go through problems, like we go through problems, to go through issues and trials. Thankfully, he didn't have Instagram, but there's probably some equivalent of that back then that he went through purposefully to experience it, because he is our captain of our salvation, and it was behooving to him to experience it for us, so that he that is going to sanctify us would know the same things that we go through as the sanctified. For which cause he is not ashamed to call them brethren, saying, I will declare thy name unto my brethren. In the midst of the church will I sing praise unto thee. And again I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children which God hath given me. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. For verily he took not on himself the nature of angels, but he took on him the seed of Abraham. And these are the clinching verses. Wherefore in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself hath suffered being tempted, he is able to help, succor, support, console them that are tempted. That was Jesus' purpose for 33 years, to experience what we go through, so that when we are tempted, we don't have an excuse to come up and go, nobody understands what I'm going through. There may not be anybody in your family. There may not be anybody in your friend group. There may not be anybody on Facebook or Instagram that understands what you're going through. But Jesus knows what you're going through. And you want to know why? Because he came and he lived it and he bought the t-shirt. Okay? So he's able to go, I know what you're going through. I know what you're suffering. In fact, I know things and sufferings that you don't even know. You haven't even experienced. So we mentioned earlier about the suicide rates up 24% in the last 16 years. What does that stem from? Hopelessness, despair, depression, feeling like you're isolated, feeling like nobody knows what you're going through. And those mediums, all they do is foster that. Jesus came, though, to give hope. He came his entire life. He traveled all those many places that he went through for 3.5 years in his ministry. He ministered to the hopeless. He ministered to the outcast. He ministered to the despairing, the poor. He healed and ministered and cared and loved, showed compassion. He taught us what real life looks like. A life living out the will of the Father, a life of love. Remember, what we started off with this was, look at how the society is degrading and how love is going away. But the gospel is still going to be there. And what does the gospel show us? A life of compassion, mercy, and love. So whereas over here you have antithesis to this, I got that word out. You got antithesis to this. You've got anger, wrath, vile, you know, attacks. You got all this stuff that's growing on this side. And then contrary to that, you have love, mercy, compassion. That's what real life is. So even though you were ever present and probably going to continue to see this one degrade and get worse and worse, we're thankful we still got this one that's in the gospel, ever present, bearing witness to it in every nation, everywhere, all the time, till the end of the world. So what does this mean for you and me? So like I said, there are people who have hijacked this verse, and I'm not trying to say that we're some kind of harbingers of the end times. I am telling you, though, you do have a part in this, okay? You do have a part in this. What stands out to me out of all of this is that this gospel is a gospel of hope. It is a gospel of love. It is a gospel of compassion. And as we were talking about what Christ told us to do, he told us, these are the things you're supposed to do. Be like me. Be compassionate. Be loving. Be merciful. That's how we play our parts in this. If we are believers in Jesus Christ this morning, this is our testimony. We can bear witness that this is true. We can go, yeah, let me tell you about me. I was lost in sin. I was destroyed. I was hopeless in despair. I have been in some of the similar situations you are. But then Christ, in his loving kindness, where he loved me, saved me, delivered me, brought me out of that to where I'm no longer a person of despair and hopelessness and feeling like there is not a friend in the world. I have a friend in Jesus. There's a song about that. I have a friend in Jesus. I know his grace and his love and his mercy, and I am a compassionate, loving, merciful person because of him. That's our testimony as believers. That's what we say. That's amazing grace. That's what we sing. This is where I was lost, but man, now I am found. So this is our story. This is what we get to claim in whatever age it is. The apostles and the disciples are claiming this back here in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s AD. Fast forward a few thousand years. Here we are, 2019. The same story, the same claim, the same gospel. This is what our world lacks. And this is what we are called to proclaim. This is our mission. Okay? Again, I was going to use another dated expression. This is our mission if you choose to accept it. And again, there's like about 50 maybe of the pot. Not going to get that, all right? I lost you on the Beatles and Mission Impossible, but anyway, we'll move on. So this, though, is our proclamation that we carry with us everywhere we go, everything we do, whether we are at work, whether we are at home, whether we are at college, whether we are at high school. Here's the beautiful thing I like about this. There's no age limits on it, okay? There's no age limits with any of this. This isn't for the 50-year-old who's lived and seen some stuff and can express it adequately. The reason I know that is because if you just flip back a couple of chapters, Jesus is doing what's described as his triumphal entry as he goes into Jerusalem 5 days before he's about to go to the cross. He walks into the temple, and the children in the temple are proclaiming his majesty. And the Pharisees and the leaders are outraged by this and say, "You need to tell these kids to hush." And Jesus says, "They're just doing what the Father has prepared them to do." So you take the smallest child who can speak, who has been touched by the Holy Spirit, and they can proclaim the same gospel that the 90-year-old, the theologically astute, the doctrinally prepared, whatever it may be, those are on equal playing field. We share the same gospel. The beautiful thing about this, and kind of our marching orders, I mean, he tells us to be like him. Matthew chapter 28, which is always referred to as the Great Commission, and I know some people argue and try to say it's all done with. I don't necessarily believe that, but in the Matthew chapter 28, he'll say, "Jesus came and spake to them, saying, all power is given unto me in heaven and earth. Go therefore and teach," or make disciples, "of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Amen." Which means this is going on till the end of the world. Amen. Which means we still have this mission. So you can take whatever Call of Duty, World of Warcraft mission, whatever you want to do, and you can line it up and say, "Man, this is something I have to do." Well, here is something that is far greater that you are called to partake in. This is a mission that, I know we go through the July 4th time and we watch Band of Brothers and things like that, and you watch these World War II things and you get all geared up because you're like, "Man, that is just think about that. Being in a situation where, like, that's your thing. You are, like, fighting this, you know, greater good kind of situation." We watch The Patriot. You watch, you know, whatever it is you watch, whatever game you play, whatever, and you get all keyed up because within you, you have this desire to fight this great battle and be the hero. Well, Jesus has called us to fight a greater battle. And as he's described, this world's only going to get worse and worse. Guess what? Your battle is only going to get harder and harder. But he says, "Do it. Be like me. Fight the battle. I'm going away. You are going to remain here from age to age to age. I'm going to be with you till the end of the world. But this is what you do. Go forth and preach and teach and make disciples of me." telling them to observe all things I commanded you. And you say, all right, that means we get at them and we go straight to Ephesians chapter 1 and Romans chapter 8 and we really get them hard on that good doctrinal stuff so they're sound. Jesus said first, love your enemies. That's what I want you founded on. I always have people will come up and say, well, you know, if I'm going to study the Bible or read the Bible, where should I start? I'm always like, we'll start where Jesus started. All right, that's great. Go to Romans, go to Ephesians, go to Hebrews. I love Hebrews chapter 2. Go to all that. But if you haven't gone to the source and read what Jesus said, you're starting in chapter 50 of the book. Go back to chapter 1. Read the Gospels. Read them over and over and over and over again. And don't read them like a textbook history lesson where it's like, oh yeah, that's what Jesus did and then he died on the cross. And now let's talk about doctrine and theology and let's get into what this means and that means. No, go back and see what Jesus told you to do. When Jesus said, love your neighbors, okay, let's start there. Let's nail that down really good. Let's get that one firm. And then let's move on. Because a lot of the societal issues are covered in Matthew 5, 6, 7, and 8. A lot, nearly every single societal issue is covered in Matthew 5, 6, 7, and 8. He goes on about adultery. He goes on about lying. He goes on about stealing. He goes on about lust. He goes on about faithfulness. He goes on about loving your neighbor. He says, you are the light and the salt of the earth in Matthew chapter 5. That is your marching orders that we have. Probably not good English there, but it works. That's our marching orders. He tells us how integral. I don't know if I got that one out either. He tells us how involved. He tells us how necessary. I really should just not. It's probably the time thing is what it is. All right. My brain is like an hour ahead of me or an hour behind me. I don't know where I'm at, but my mouth is not caught up with it. Okay. But as we see this world falling apart, degrading, we have worsening hopelessness, depression, anxiety, fears, wars, and rumors of wars. We cannot ignore these things. We cannot hide from these things. We cannot cloister our families and everybody away and let's just all come together and hide from the problems because Jesus says, I have called you out. I have called you out to be the light that is in the world. If we are hiding ourselves away, guess what that means? I'm not a mathematician, but I can get that. If we're supposed to be out there and we're not, you know what that means? That there's no light. If we're called to be the light and we're not being the light, hereto, ergo, hitherfore, that means there's no light. There's no light in your families, there's no light in your communities, there's no light in your church, there's no light in your nation. He says, you are the salt of the earth. Salt is like a super necessary thing, okay? I mean, you could say, oh, well, it's good on beans and stuff. Yeah, I know, and it is. But, you know, it's also, like, really important for our bodies. It's one of those elements that you have to live. We just, like, dissolve into goo if we don't, okay? So we're very important. And that's why he uses it. He says, you're important. I've called you out as my disciples not to be monks cloistered away in a monastery. I've called you to be out. You're the salt for the world. You're the light for the world. I have given you a mission. Go to the world. Teach the world about my life, my gospel, about what I lived and why I lived, and what I lived for and what I accomplished. And yes, what they have to hope for because of all that. But tell the society a different way than the way it's going. Show the world that what they're seeing as the norm does not have to be the norm. That's the beautiful thing of it. When he calls us out and tells us that we're to be different, you know, that wasn't like be different and wear different clothes or, you know, have a different kind of religious organization. That's not what he said. You're going to be different because you're going to act differently. People are going to hate, you're going to love. In fact, people are going to hate and go, why don't you hate them? Because they hate you back. And you say, I don't know, I'm just loving them because that's what Jesus told me to do. And I love doing it. Why are you being compassionate to them? Because Jesus was compassionate to me. I got to do what I got to do. That's just who I am. Why are you showing them mercy? Because I have been shown mercy. Why are you loving these people you don't even know? How can you love these people? They haven't done anything for you. I know, and you know, that's what I do. You know, you've heard the phrase, you do you and I'll do me, okay? That's kind of how I feel in this. That's just who I, that's who I am. I can't help but be anything but that. Jesus has born me again and woven that into my DNA now. I have the Spirit of God within me that gives me peace and long-suffering and mercy and compassion and faith and love and all these things. That's just in me. So how can I be anything but? So that's what hopefully this morning is impressed on us. This big, amazing story that we are a part of and that we get to proclaim. And we're going to be proclaiming it till this world ends. I don't know when that's going to be. Jesus even said he didn't know when that was going to be. But we know it's going to happen, all right? What's most important, though, is while these things are getting worse and worse and worse, we're not forgetting our responsibility and what we are called to do. Yes, you have been saved. Yes, you have. If you were a born-again and believer in Jesus Christ, you have been changed. You have been made new. You have all these things. And Christ said, now go, I did that so you would go live in this world and that you would show other people about me so that they don't just pull up CNN and find out that this is the sum total of the existence of the world. God help us if it is, okay? That this is the sum total of your existence is a bleak, miserable, hopeless disparity, and then you die. No, Jesus said, go out there and tell people about me. Go out there and tell them about what I have done. Go out there and let them know that there is most certainly something bigger, more amazing, greater, life-changing in this world, and it is the gospel of Jesus Christ. May God bless us to do that.